project. We are throwing it back to September 2018. We have Chad Vaughan, who is a former American weightlifter in the 77 kilo category. And, you know, for a lot of people that were in the CrossFit world, he was a big inspiration in helping them improve their Olympic weightlifting. And Chad just has an incredible story. He was the top lifter in America for a very long time. They had very few athletes on the Olympic stage.
I think it was him and one other.
And maybe Kendrick Farris. And yeah, so Chad's always been a representative in Olympic weightlifting for his country, which puts him up there as one of the best American weightlifters of all time.
Yeah.
So we shared so much information with Chad since then. He's been continuing, since the recording of this episode, he's been continuing to work on his online training and do seminars with the Power Monkey Fitness Camps and some of his own stuff. And he continues to just, help the next generations of weightlifters. And I'll tell you what, he's making a huge difference for the Americans. This guy just has so much knowledge when it comes to weightlifting.
Yeah, and he's one of those guys where he's not like a freak show, which is like always strong and came out. Like, he did it the right way.
Yeah.
He had disadvantages. He talks about it in the show. He overcame them. And what he recommends with weightlifting, I think, as well, is just like so sound for people. It's not like, oh, like Bulgarian, just like until you get tendonitis.
Yeah.
Just keep going. He's like, nah. He's like, you know, mobility, positions, like that is the key to building your lifts and consistency. I think that's why his message is so popular.
Yeah, absolutely. And guys, brought to you today, this episode is Activated Nutrients. If you guys are looking for a complete whole food vitamin and mineral supplement, essentially a greens powder that is super high quality, I think that's something we've always prided ourselves on, is we're always supporting brands and taking brands ourselves that are just really clean, really high quality, well-made products. And you know, you just need that insurance for your body every day when you're depleting it of so many different minerals and vitamins. And of course, no one's diet is perfect. No one's diet is complete, especially someone like us who work on it really hard. I still know there's tons of things that are missing from my diet. And then Activate Nutrients is just a great way of making sure that I cover those things off. In fact, it has omega-3s and omega-6s in it as well. So you are covering those sorts of bases. So it is one of those supplements that makes you also be able to get rid of some other supplements in your cupboard. So if you find you're opening 4 or 5 bottles every day, you can just open one packet of Activated Nutrients. You don't need all that extra other stuff because it is all in there in clinically measured amounts. And what I mean by that is the amounts of the different dosages of these supplements are clinically effective. So a lot of different companies take what are clinically effective sort of research, but they don't put the dose in, and therefore it's not as effective. Activated Nutrients ensures that they do that for all their products. So very excited about that. If you guys go to activatednutrients.com, use the code OFFERMMP, then you'll get a 20% discount on all the Activated Nutrient products. This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Raph Friedman, and you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project.
Mind Muscle Project, welcome back to another episode of the show. This week, we have on Chad Vaughan. And Chad was probably the first, I would say, weightlifter besides John North in America that I followed very closely, trying to learn as much as I could. And that's probably because Chad was linked up pretty closely inside of the CrossFit sort of, not really seminar, but just got some good promotion from CrossFit in the early days. And as we all know, in the early days, there was probably one video a month, and it was either Rich Froning or it was, you know, some specialist seminar. Definitely seen a lot of your hyperextended elbows for a long time, and been following your lifting career and that sort of thing. So the question I had that I was, you know, I'm like, how am I going to open this conversation? And Chad's followed him for a while and just wanted to know. But I recently went to a powerlifting meet, and it was very, very evident. And I've been to a weightlifting meet before, that the culture around food and nutrition in strength sports is very different to CrossFit. It's very, very common to see pizza, very common to see energy drinks, very common to see Domino's and that sort of things. But I want to know, Chad, do you dive into that stuff? Are you a big fan of energy drinks and pizza and Domino's and donuts and all that sort of thing?
Well, I do love donuts. I don't eat them as much as I'd like to. If I ate them as much as I'd like to, it'd be every single day. Same thing with pizza. I love pizza. I actually used to deliver for Domino's Pizza.
Oh, nice.
For like on and off for 3 years back when I was training for the Olympics and stuff like that. And so I did eat a fair amount of pizza then. And as far as energy drinks, my big thing is coffee. Back when I was training, I would limit myself to just a couple a couple cups really a week, and that would be during training just as a stimulant, and I would try to stay off of it the rest of the time. But yeah, it's interesting what you say. You see a little bit more of that type of thing in weightlifting competitions than you would at a CrossFit competition, but probably not as much as a powerlifting competition. So I don't know if there's if we have a little bit of a range there, you know, where powerlifters maybe are on the far extreme of that.
Of the spectrum, yeah, for sure.
Just something else we can make fun of powerlifters for, I guess.
Yeah, as many things. You mentioned that you're still traveling, doing the seminars, still coaching a lot of people. You're obviously part of the Power Monkey Fitness Strength Camp. We had Dave on the other day, and you know, there's multiple high level coaches on this seminar. How does that compare, or how do you find the crowds that show up to Power Monkey in comparison to the people that show up to your own weightlifting seminars? Like, what kind of athletes are showing up there?
It's very much almost mostly the same. I think I would say there are a little bit more of your, I don't know what we want to call them, everyday CrossFitter at Power Monkey Camp. But you know, really what we're looking for, what I'm looking for at my own seminars or at Power Monkey Camp, is just really anyone at any level that's interested in being better. And that's it. And it's, I think a lot of people shy away from coming to Power Monkey Camp or coming to one of my own personal seminars because there's a thought of they have to be prepared for it, or they have to be better, or they need to be in CrossFit or weightlifting for a year or 5 years before they deserve to go to one of these types of events. But that's completely opposite. In fact, we every now and then we'll get a couple people at Power Monkey Camp or to one of my seminars who have never done CrossFit or weightlifting before, and we're like, wow, that's exactly what we want. That's awesome. How did you hear about it, and why are you here? And they say, well, I'm here because I was interested in getting into CrossFit or weightlifting or whatever it was. And I thought, you know, with the coaches that you guys have gathered up, there's no better place, no better way to go learn this stuff than from this group of experts. And that's the message that we want to get out. That's the mindset that we want. And I'm sure you guys have heard a lot of CrossFitters or a lot of people that want to do CrossFit, but they don't say, well, I need to get in shape before I do CrossFit. And that this really, yeah, if you think about it, makes no sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So my follow-up question to that was, have you seen it change over time with obviously CrossFit not as new as it once was? I'm sure maybe back in the day when everyone was jumping on the CrossFit bandwagon in 2011, 2012, 13, probably had a lot more popularity, or maybe there were more people at your seminars. I don't know. What have you seen sort of the dynamic of who, like how popular seminars are and what people want at seminars? Have they changed what the questions are asking and what they want, and are they more or less popular these days?
That's a really, really good question. Quite honestly, I've personally always struggled to get numbers at my seminars, and there's a number of reasons for that. I think one is that I'm still not good at promotion, still terrible at that type of thing. In fact, I used to advertise my seminars as, don't expect to come to my seminar and do a PR. And, well, that was ridiculous. Like, looking back now, I'm like, man, did you really say that? But I was trying to prove a point. I was trying to say, look, we're going to work on technique. I want to teach you. You shouldn't expect to come immediately lift more weights from the changes that we're going to be trying to make and that kind of thing. So I've always struggled with numbers. I've never been able to get a big group of people together, but I would say probably what I've seen over the last couple of years, and I think probably CrossFit seminar staff and just about anyone doing seminars out there these days would agree, that the interest level, well, at least in the US, is down a little bit. I think so many people have been to so many different seminars, and with weightlifting specifically, every weightlifter and their dog pretty much has their own seminar. So it's really hard to compete with that. It's one of the things that I'm always doing as a coach, is battling misconceptions and misunderstandings and misinterpretations. And hey, why does this person teach it this way? And why does this person teach it that way. So there are a lot more of those types of questions, I guess, to answer a part of that question. But one of the things that I've started doing over the last year and a half is saying, you know, I just finally said, I'm kind of tired of the normal seminar type setting. What I would really like to do is work with everyone, ideally one-on-one. You can kind of, I look at it as cheating. If I want to be the best coach that I can be, then I can be a better coach if I'm just working with one-on-one. And so I will travel to different gyms and I will offer one-on-ones, but I'll also offer small group sessions of just three people. Those sessions are like 90 minutes to 2 hours long. As a prerequisite for people to get into that, I'll do like a 2 hour session where I talk pretty much all about the squat and mobility and the reality of weightlifting, the realistic demands of the Olympic lifts, what you're going to, what's happening, what are the elite lifters doing? What are they really doing? And what are you going to need to mimic as much as you can and just try to get some points across and try to get them headed in the right direction. And then I start to break them up into much smaller groups. And what I've seen happen is I'm able to actually work with more people throughout the day than I would have if I would have set it up as a full day seminar or a full 2 day, because it seems like they're more willing to come to something with that has less of a time commitment to it, a little bit less of a financial commitment to it. I still think a lot of people are very intimidated to do it, but it's even still a little less intimidating in that way as well.
Mm. Do you think, I've seen people come back from seminars sometimes with some very strange ideas about what they learned at the seminar. So potentially, yeah, I do think the model where like 50 people are in a room, you can get lost and you can, if you're a beginner, take the wrong ideas out of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's where a lot of that misinterpretation comes from. And so you leave those types of situations with, some general teachings from the individual that's teaching, but nothing really to take away as an individual. And that's not always bad or completely wrong or completely waste of your time. But, you know, when you say 50 people, I've been coaching in the community since early 2010, and that's not like a significant amount of time, but in that amount of time, it still boggles my mind that anyone can get 50 people to sign up for their seminar. I'm like, how in the world do you do that? I'm just amazed at it. And it's one of the things that used to really frustrate me so much. And I would have negative emotions and negative thoughts towards these individuals that were able to do that. I was jealous. And then I thought, you know what? They have a skill that you need to learn. So you should respect that skill and take some notes. And so that's kind of what I started doing.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, rather than be bitter about it, learn from them and
join them.
Adopt their skills, partner with them, join the Power Monkey Fitness bandwagon.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you said there was stuff that you teach people, like what are the top weightlifters really doing? I think people always think that. I think there's like there's always levels to anything, right? So. Mm-hmm. When you start off, you're going to need more volume of skill work to learn the skill so that you get really good at it, so that you take out a lot of the thinking when it comes to, doing the lifts in the future. And then over time, obviously it shifts and then you do maybe more strength work and you do more heavy lifting once the skill level is a lot higher. And then eventually people think that, okay, I did so much volume to get to this point. Right, a lot of training to kind of learn things quickly. Maybe I'm going to have to do more and more and more volume, more skill work and more heavy weights and more sets of squats to get to the high level. So I'm curious as to how you deal with that conversation with those people when they're obviously stuck in that mindset or have that idea.
Yeah, for sure. Are you ready for my 2 hour lecture right now?
I'm ready.
No, honestly, it's really tough because all those things that you named towards the end are steps that, you know, are appropriate steps to take, but way more people than not aren't there. And, you know, I struggle as a coach because probably most of the people that I come across, and I'm just being honest with this, about this is, their mobility isn't good enough and or they can't even set up consistently well enough to be able to really move forward. So if I'm telling them the same thing for over the course of 1 to 2 years, and when I tell them, I see them do it, they just don't maintain it on their own. So it's not like they can't physically do it, but when they're not maintaining those basic things, those very basic initial things of putting your hands in the right spot on a clean or a snatch, putting your feet in the same position that I told you, like, people need to understand that we cannot move beyond that. Anything that we do beyond that is a waste of time for the most part, and is us spinning our wheels. And then going back to mobility, mobility is just so huge. I mean, that's something that I've had to learn a lot more about as a weightlifting coach, you know, since I first started in early 2010. And I used to be of the mindset, which is a little bit of an arrogant mindset, of that I can fix anyone with the barbell, just with the barbell and barbell mobility and stuff like that. And I think some of that stuff is really good and very effective, but there's way more to mobility than that. And more people than not in the community need to fix those basics first. And so to me, it's not about, okay, let's work with what you got and let's develop some sort of new magic technique for you. Let's fix some of your issues. And let's try to get you headed towards moving or looking and having the capabilities of those elite lifters, which are most elite lifters. And I'm going to say 99%, just in case there are those couple out there that are a little different, that are freaks and can get away with it. 99% of the best lifters in the world are very flexible overall. Very, very good mobility. And we're actually known as the second most flexible sport in the Olympics, next to gymnasts. I would say we're probably a little more flexible in some areas, but the amount of mobility that's needed for you to really move the way that we want and for you to really be as effective and as efficient as you possibly can is way more than what most people have. And I think that way too many people just label themselves and kind of give up on things that they see as impossible.
Mm. Yeah. Have you seen like dramatic improvements in some people that you never thought would get there without just the barbell? I mean, obviously you mentioned you just do the barbell mobility, but since incorporating some more holistic stuff, I assume some of the stuff from the Power Monkey guys, Dave, et cetera, has probably rubbed off a little bit on the mobility side. Have you seen some people make some pretty dramatic improvements, you know, in the hips and their squat and the overhead?
I have seen some people make some really solid improvements, and I'm going to be honest with you, it's not very many. It's not very many because more people than not just don't stick with it long enough. And so, and especially in CrossFit, the mindset of, hey, I want to move faster now, or I want to lift more weight now, which is possible. I had to really kind of admit to myself not too long ago, it was just before a Power Monkey event that I was going to, and I was kind of going over what I talk about and what I teach in my mind. And the thing about mobility that I reluctantly had to admit to myself is it's not a must. Does that make sense? It's not like for someone to be fitter. And in this community, people want to be fit. The definition of fit is for you to be able to do more work in a shorter amount of time, or to do more work in a certain amount of time. So the intensity of that workout is what everybody is really the biggest definition of what CrossFit is and what people want. And so you can get fit. You can be a really fit individual and have very little mobility, right? And so that's part of the problem, and part of the what makes people not necessarily overlook it, but just push it to the side and not work it as much as they should. And so the thing about what mobility is it's something that can make you more efficient, more effective, can lead you to better results over a long period of time. But yeah, I have seen some people change, but not as many as I'd like. And here's the thing, because it isn't really as many as I'd like, every time I see even a tiny amount of change in someone with mobility or position, I'm still surprised. I'm still like, Wow, it is actually possible for someone to improve. Yeah. So it's just always still surprising to me when something works, and I even catch myself asking myself these types of questions all the time. Is what you're teaching really, is there really legitimacy to it? Like, are you just making shit up? Because I don't see change in a lot of people, as many people as I'd like. I'm like, is what you're saying really what needs to be said? But those people that I come across every now and then that I really see some good change in, or again, even a slight amount that turns into a little more over a long period of time, it gives me that confirmation. So.
Mm. Yeah. Weightlifting is interesting because it's definitely one of those, obviously it's one of the most ancient sports in the world, but it also doesn't have a whole lot of like studies, research and science behind it. It does for sure. And I've read some of it, but nothing compared to like muscle hypertrophy or bodybuilding or nutrition or that sort of thing. So it's like a lot of the,
or like running.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Conditioning, like improving that. A lot of the, this is how you get better is from experience, is from
what somebody said, a Russian coach said.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah.
An interpretation of an old textbook, which got passed down here and passed down there. Now I think only now are they sort of really blending with guys like yourself, working with, you know, the Power Monkey guys, you know, kind of spearheading the holistic approach to the body to improve something like a specialist sport of weightlifting. Only now is it really going, okay, we can't do this to the shoulder. We can't do that many reps, you know, on the shoulder from this angle, or we can't set up in this position because if we catch in this way, like it's going to cause this injury over time. And so there's a much more scientific method approach to it. And yeah, from the weightlifting seminars that I've been to in the past, for sure, it's guys just going off their experience of what they've done, what's worked well for them. And it may not necessarily be the best thing. Probably the biggest ones, the Bulgarian method. Like that got thrown around on YouTube like it was, you know, the holy grail of programming for probably a good year, from like 2014 to like 15, and fucked a lot of people's knees up, that's for sure. And shoulders and wrists. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so, no, I was just gonna say it's the Bulgarian training program is really probably the bigger issue with that than anything with people getting injured, is they're doing that amount of repetition and volume, you know, again, with lacking mobility and their technique not being very good. They're lifting with imbalances and compensations all over the place. And that's really what I would say is injuring them and causing their pain more than anything. I went through, I was on the elite level, but I went through years of the Bulgarian program. Now through the years it dwindled down, the volume wasn't near what they do, but for a while it was, and I was 19, 20 years old at the time. So that had something to do with it as well, but I was able to sustain it and benefit from it because I did have good overall mobility. My body was balanced. I was a balanced athlete and I had good technique. And so when you combine those things together, that allows you to sustain that higher volume, you know? And that's part of it too. And that's, you know, part of what you're saying. And this is me going back to what I already talked about before. It's like, I want people to understand it's not so much about what program you're doing or what you're doing to get stronger or to lift more weight. It's about first, making your body complete, making it, you know, working towards more mobility, making sure that you're not dominant anywhere in your body, that your body is well balanced, that your upper body is not stronger than your lower body or vice versa, or your posterior is not stronger than your anterior and vice versa. And so that kind of thing. And those types of things, again, I go back to people just overlook. They overlook. And if you'll balance those things out the best that you can, then, you know, I don't want to say it doesn't matter what program you get on, but it matters less what program you get on.
I do feel like, yeah, in terms of reality, most people, if you didn't do weightlifting or something growing up, if you like just did regular sports or like a regular human until you were like 20 and then you started lifting, I don't ever see you like ever being appropriate for a program like the Bulgarian program.
Yeah, it would take someone that that didn't lock their body up, you know, through their younger years. And unfortunately, it's not in the U.S. anyway, it's not realistic to say a 20-year-old, very many 20-year-olds at all that haven't already been doing weightlifting are going to be well suited for a number of years, because it's the sad thing that I come across a lot, and so many people agree, is that our teenage boys in this country are the tightest humans in the world right now. They're just it's sad, and it's unbelievable, but it's definitely true. I mean, every time I test their hamstrings, for example, it's just like, you know, I want their, when they're laying down, I want their leg to be able to get up to 90 degrees, and it's barely 45. You can't do a whole lot, much of anything, with those, with when your hamstrings are that tight, you know.
Yeah, except run fast and catch a football, maybe.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, they can usually still run pretty fast, or some of them can still run pretty fast, but that's about it.
Yeah, it wasn't Wes Kitz. He's like he's one of the best weightlifters in America at the moment. He was former college football player, I believe.
I think so. Yeah, I'm not real familiar with his background, but I believe that's correct.
Yeah, I think if someone like that is to make a transition and be as good as he is, I think there has to inherently on a genetic level be some level of collagen elasticity that if he just started doing a couple stretching and some barbell yoga, like he's at the bottom of the squat, ask the grass, even if he's never really cared about it much before in his life.
Yep.
Just the right hip capsule, the right shoulder capsule, the right tendons, ligaments, everything, just all the stars kind of align, and that's where you get, you know, someone who's the tip of the spear like Wes. I was going to take it back to the Bulgarian program. I think obviously one thing that's there but not said is that obviously the Bulgarians that wrote it were probably enhanced. A movie came out called Icarus. I'm sure you watched it.
I actually haven't. I've been meaning to for a long time. Honestly, it's one of those things where, look, I need to watch it. I want to watch it, but it's hard for me to make myself do it because that was the story of my career. I mean, not my career, not just my career, but everyone that I came through the ranks with from, you know, the time I was an elite lifter from around about 2000 to, you know, right up to 2012 was, that's what we competed against. And, it's not like most of them were trying to hide it. Now they wanted to pass a drug test and stuff like that, but it's the type of thing that a lot of them would openly, talk to us about at international competition. And, yeah, this is what we do. Hey, you guys don't do that. Wow. That's, no wonder, you know, but, and some of them were impressed with the weights that we were able to lift, not being enhanced, the way that they were. So it's just, it's one of those things where, yeah, I need to make myself watch it, but it's hard at the same time.
That was exactly what I was going to ask, is like, if you had watched it, my obvious question was, it would feel like you were ripped off. It would feel like, I mean, you already knew, right? You just said that they told you at the meets anyway, but it's just, surely at some point it makes you feel like, well, why aren't we doing it? You know, if I want to win that gold medal, if I'm putting in all this work, why shouldn't we do it? Was that ever the thoughts that crossed your mind?
No, that thoughts never crossed my mind. I mean, I've had a couple of them. Some of them too look down on us because they see it kind of in the way of, hey, you're not willing to do whatever it takes to win, so you're less than we are. But I don't know. I guess it's just the culture and the training that we get on anti-doping and you know, through U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, and the fact that the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency is there. And at that time, maybe even still now for the most part, but at that time we were one of the only, if not the only, country in the world that had their own governing body or their own anti-doping agency. So I think maybe just all those things combined, you know, it's never been okay for me. It's never been something that I would allow myself to do.
Do you find it's an interesting duality though, that the culture of steroids in America is so, so prominent with bodybuilding, especially, and powerlifting, but when it comes to your sports and your Olympic athletes and like yourself, it's very anti. You know, it's almost like, why are we so into it in one aspect? But it's still, it's sort of like a sport. I guess it's more like a beauty sport. A powerlifting, I guess, is a sport as well. But on the other hand, it's like, don't touch it at all. But it's almost like the same people sending two messages.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, from the outside looking in, I can understand, you know, people in not inside of either one of those communities really completely understand it. And they definitely see, not so much now that CrossFit's been around for a while, but, you know, they definitely see, you know, me as a weightlifter, as a barbell sport, and someone that more than likely uses. So we have those, you know, people thinking that all the time, you know, when we're up and coming. But yeah, the toughest part really is, you know, people like, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Shane Hammond or Oscar Chaplin, both really just incredible athletes. They still, even with all the incredible young athletes that we have that are breaking all the records, those two guys still have so many records that haven't been broken. And, you know, they're just two examples of individuals that it's, we'll never know how good they really were, you know, cause there wasn't a level playing field. I don't know if there ever will be a level playing field, but just those types of individuals, those types of athletes that are just extraordinary, but yet they weren't, you know, they weren't on top. Would they have been if the playing field was level? So,
yeah, you never know. So where do you feel like, you know, you come back from a meet, you just heard it from the horse's mouth. It's obviously a little bit demotivating in some respects. Where do you then search for motivation? Where do you then feel like, okay, why am I doing this? And then also on top of that, if you're like, I'm doing this because, you know, I want to be the best American weightlifter, for example, which obviously you were for a long time in your weight class. Where do you feel like on the international stage, you were going to get your edge? What do you feel like you had to do to compete with those guys? Did you change anything up? Did you try anything different?
Yeah, I think my mindset for a good handful of years was not good. I think I spun my wheels a lot and even worked myself backwards because I was going for 10 more kilos on my snatch instead of one. And I think if I could go back and do it again, I would try to get my mind off of the results as much as possible and off of trying to compete with these guys and trying to win and just put it on improving myself. And that's what I try to get across to any athlete. It doesn't matter what level that they're at. It's about, you know, self-improvement in very small chunks. And if I could go back and try to snatch one more kilo for however long that took me, instead of 10, then I think I would have lifted more weight and I probably would have performed better on the international stage. I don't think that I would have competed head to head with those guys, but I think I would have been a little bit closer.
Yeah, it is. People, it can seem a little bit like people on the way up, they just have like the two different numbers in their head. They were like the international numbers and then the American numbers, and you almost got to choose which one you're going for.
Yeah, I mean, there, you know, honestly, there's more than enough goals to go after. And I think if motivation is a problem for anyone out there that's trying to compete or be the best that they can be, then maybe you need to do something else, because you, in my opinion, someone should be so self-motivated that all these things don't matter as much or at all. But I think the mindset can be shifted a little bit too much in one direction or the other on occasion.
So Chad, getting to the end of your elite career, you mentioned around like 2012, at what point did you tell yourself in your head or start to make the shift that you weren't going to be, you know, heading back to the Olympics, or you weren't going to be as competitive as you once were, like what did, was there a defining moment, or was it a conversation with someone, or how did you eventually reach that point in your lifting career?
Man, that's been tough and really something that I don't think I've ever completely admitted to myself even to this day. I would say that it was, for me, I was lucky that I was in the CrossFit community because I was able to still be around it very much and still train and still work out and still lift weights on a regular basis and to be able to teach it and to talk about something that I knew and loved so much. And so it was a very, very, has been a very, very slow transition for me. I think it's definitely made it a lot easier. So there was never a day to where it was just a sad day and a sad moment where I said it's over, because of that, all the things that I was around and the slow transition that I was able to make. But I think it was probably somewhere around 2013 or 2014, where I started training hard again and went back to the national championships and did pretty good. I placed third there, and up to that point I'd won 9 times in a row, so it was a little bit hard to take in that aspect, but that really wasn't it. It was really more just a matter of I was just busy and focused and passionate about coaching and teaching and other things and family and so weightlifting, me as an athlete within the sport of weightlifting took a little bit of a back seat, not necessarily because I wasn't at as high of a level, but just because of priorities.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's always the transition you see high level athletes make, is something else that is as meaningful takes, like you never lose the hunger, that just like internal drive for whatever ambition you have, it just shifts onto something else. You just place that ambition on top of coaching or running your business or being the best, you know, power monkey athlete, weightlifting coach. For sure, it's been a conversation you've also had with Dave Durante. I mean, similar sort of situation, Olympic athlete, one of the best gymnasts in America. You guys must share some similar conversations around this stuff.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely very similar careers and mindsets. We're pretty much exactly the same age. I think I'm a month older. So I'm a month older and I do beat Dave on most everything else except for gymnastics. So I don't know if he admitted that to you or not, but I am about a month older than him. But we've definitely had some conversations about that. But the thing about it too, and being around Dave and a lot of these other coaches that are in the community and that are able to coach because of CrossFit, when I think about what I would be doing if it wasn't for CrossFit and what that transition might have looked like, I don't know. And I would think that I don't know that I would be doing as well emotionally, you know. I think because I don't think I would be as passionate about anything else as I am about you know, weightlifting and CrossFit and all the other things that I'm able to do and work on in this community, because it's more popular.
Mm.
Yeah, if I was a, not taking anything away from any of these professions, but if I was a firefighter or a teacher or something like that, I don't know that I would get, me personally, as much fulfillment out of it.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think you see it pretty much with all, you honestly don't really see it in Australia, but you do see it with a lot of high level college athletes in America, is that it's almost like they reach the pinnacle of their life, is a bit extreme, but it may be accurate in some respects.
Yeah.
You know, stepping out into a stadium of, you know, 50, 60,000,
like 100,000 people.
Yeah, like fucking crazy stuff, right? And they never make it to the NFL. And then it's like, all right, now you got to go sit behind a desk and be an accountant.
Mm-hmm.
Not to take away from accountants, but by contrast to what they were doing when they were 20, 21 is somewhat depressing when you really deal with it. And I can imagine it would be hard. And it's all relative, right? I'm sure, yeah, if you didn't have the smooth transition into being a leader in the sport of weightlifting across the community, having podcasts, having people care about what you say on Instagram and that sort of thing, then it's tough. It's a lot harder, and it would be a similar situation.
Well, you're going back down, like right to the bottom, whereas like you've almost like stayed at the top, like used your all the work you've done. But yeah, I'd imagine if you go from the top, like to the very, you're almost behind. You spent the first 25 years running into people.
Yeah.
You definitely, you're at a big disadvantage, and I definitely noticed that with myself, even coaching. I mean, I came in, at about 30 years old, way behind on coaching, way behind on running a business. I have a lot of college behind me, but I still don't have a degree. To this day, I tell people I have an Olympic degree, I guess, but that's about it. But definitely, just, and two, I mean, I'm a shy guy anyways, but I've definitely, trying to take a look at myself from the outside and can see even to this day how my social skills, unless I'm up in front of you teaching and running a seminar, or if I'm on a podcast, my social skills are still terrible, to be honest with you. And I think some of that is because of my personality, but some of it is also because of just being a hermit and alone in the gym, for all those years.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. Mm. Yeah. It's definitely a more social sport, weightlifting, but it's definitely less social than some other sports, spending so much time in the gym, especially because you can do a lot of the training by yourself. Whereas like a lot of other sports, you do need like people there and teammates, for like drills and practice and all that stuff. It's like, oh, I can just go do like my squats and my bench, by myself three times a week. And so it kind of goes away. Mm-hmm. In terms of the programming, we haven't really touched on it too much, but how much has it sort of shifted over the last few years with you just generally prescribing someone to get better at weightlifting that hasn't really done it before? So it could be a young kid or it could be a CrossFitter coming into it. Obviously, we talked about mobility. Let's assume that they've done or that they have good prerequisite mobility, good ankles, hips, knees, shoulders, etc. What does the program look like? Is it 5-6 days a week? Is it 3 days a week? Is there bodybuilding? Is there powerlifting in there? Is there some conditioning? How do you approach it from this standpoint?
Yeah, it's definitely evolved through the years and as I've experimented and gotten more familiar as a coach and as a programmer. But I usually start, if someone, again, they have the prerequisite mobility and that kind of thing, and but they're still fairly new, I like to start people at 3 or 4 days a week of training, usually 3 days. I think what happens a lot of times is people hear about these programs that are 5 or 6 days a week and have all this amount of volume and a lot of, regular heavy snatches and clean and jerks. And that's what they want to do. That's what they think they need to do. That's what they think they have to do to be the best that they can. And so try to get people to understand, look, let's start here. Let's build up your capacity a little bit. Let's get you used to a weightlifting program. And there's not really a need to rush into 4 days or 5 days or 6 days if you're still improving. And I think that's where people just, again, that's another place people definitely get ahead of themselves. And I like to tell people a lot now, if you're on a 5 or 6 day a week program right now and you're not really seeing any progress, well, probably the best thing that you can do, especially if you've never done it, is get on a 3 day a week program for a while and stay there until you stall out. When you stall out, maybe now it's time for you to go to 4 days. When I came back after the 2008 Olympics, I took 6 months out of the gym, didn't touch a bar for like 6 months. It was really weird, but I brought myself back through that next year on only 3 days a week of training to about 95% of my best. And I knew that I wanted to try for the Olympics again. And so I thought, okay, I've done this well. I feel like I've kind of stalled out with 3 days, me up to 4 days. It took me back that getting a 1 kilo lifetime, only one, it was 1 kilo, but it was an improvement. It was a 1 kilo PR on my total at the 2011 national championships on 4 days a week of training. Some of that was because I went through a long, many, many years of, 6 to 9 workouts a week that allowed me to be just so overly conditioned that I could do pretty much whatever I wanted in 3 to 4 days a week of training. But also on the other side of that is that I built up to that over many years. And so to get to where I was there, you have to first go through that small amount of training in the beginning and build up to a higher level of volume. And then at some point, you're probably going to benefit from coming back down again.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I definitely had the fear when I stepped back from, or when we stepped back from training, what, 10 to 11 sessions a week, that we would become fat and unfit and shitty. But it's actually been really easy to maintain our level of fitness, probably not in all aspects, but definitely just our baseline with, you know, 3 to 4 days a week. And it's pretty incredible that all that work that you do early on, like, it just kind of sticks with you. It's just like you've built this body now that is just so different to what everyone else's body that didn't do that is, you know, from just how thick your tendons are and just the collagen in your joints and everything, and just how dense your bones are. Like, it matters heaps, you know. You can just pick up a heavy weight really close to what you used to be able to do. Yeah, it doesn't feel good because you're not used to it, but all your strength's still there. Like, a lot of your strength's still there, and it comes back really fast. It's it's pretty like sort of superhuman with all that extra work that you do when you're young. And it's just why, like, young gymnasts that were elite for a long time, or weightlifters, they can still do handstands when they're like 30 and 40 years old, and they haven't done a handstand in like 2 decades. Obviously, like, tons and tons of training changes at a younger age, changes you biologically so much that you're almost like a different human later in life, that you can like just pick up heaps of stuff and just be like almost like a freak to everyone else. But it's almost like the adults now that see such young athletes pick up something like CrossFit again later in life, they try so hard to get there, but they don't realize how elite people were. I think I had this conversation on a Saturday night at like 4 a.m. or something over a few drinks, but it almost feels unfair. It's like, you don't even train that much, and it's like, you still, you know, qualify for regionals. You still do this and that. It's like, well, the amount of work that they were doing from ages fucking 8 to 15 on the gymnastics mats or in the gym doing weightlifting, whatever it is, was so insane that, like, even if you spent the next, it's almost like an exponential amount of years, like 5 years.
It's like every year in your teenage is like worth 10.
Exactly. Yeah. It's worth like 3 or 4 as an adult, because you can change your biology so dramatically when you're younger that it's like, you almost have like superhuman powers. You can like come back and qualify to regionals or weightlifting or whatever it is, but just such a small amount of training that it just feels unfair to everyone else, but it is what it is. Like, there's nothing they can do about it. It's that time is gone. So it's interesting.
Yeah. I've definitely noticed that a lot with myself and with a lot of my older weightlifting friends. It's weird to say older, but we are older now, I guess. But they have the same experience. And I was just on the USA Weightlifting podcast. We were just talking to a guy that by the name of Artie Dreschler. He wrote the weightlifting encyclopedia, if you guys have ever heard of that. But he was giving us a good history lesson on just weightlifting in general. But he was, you know, talking to us about, Cheryl and I, about our ages, and we were just talking about training and everything else. And he said, hey, remember, you know, you, all the training you guys have put in before, it doesn't take much at all to kind of wake your body back up. And I've definitely experienced that. I mean, I can go, just throwing some numbers out there, 3 to 6 months without snatching at all. And, you know, go do like a medium snatch session on a Monday. If I know I'm going to do this CrossFit workout online that has a heavy snatch in it, just to kind of prep myself a little bit, and I'm still able to snatch, you know, 125 or 130 kilos that Friday.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, it's still a little bit surprising, but it, at the same time, like you said, it makes sense in the aspect of all of the time and years that I put in to get to where I was, to be able to maintain. And it's not like I'm not doing anything. I'm still doing CrossFit workouts and still, you know, squatting and deadlifting and stuff like that. But the actual action of the snatch is almost non-existent in my programming. So it's cool to still be able to do it heavy every now and then.
No, that's cool. Awesome. So I think what would be good before we wrap with the questions, I wanted to get your final thoughts on one particular thing. Now, you may not have paid as close of attention as we did, but there was almost like a cult following for a while at California Strength with the characters that would go there. Did you ever used to watch some of their videos and the madness that used to go on those platforms? That still does, honestly, but it's obviously a lot different now than it was back then. Did you have many thoughts on what those guys were doing over there and the antics that they used to get up to?
Man, I'll be honest with you. I did not ever watch it. I wish I would have now because people talk about it a lot just to see what was going on. I'm sure it was entertaining. I will tell you that I'm a fan of Donnie Schenkel. I was able to room with him on a couple of international trips, and he's definitely an interesting character, as everyone knows. And I'm a fan of John North, man. I mean, he's definitely very entertaining. I've been on his podcast a couple of times, but just watching him as a lifter, I mean, he really, in my opinion, a lot of weightlifters don't agree with this, but in my opinion, he brought some needed flavor to our sport, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm not the guy to get out there and to do what he did and what he does out there on the platform. But I definitely enjoy what he did and what he's been able to do in the community from the personality that he has.
Mm. Yeah, well, I remember that whole incident about like where USA Weightlifting banned slamming bars. And then he started his own weightlifting meet so they could play music and slam bars. Like,
yeah.
It was a funny little period, but obviously his little show died off a little bit. But
yeah,
like you said, it's much needed sort of vitality and flavor into, you know, taking a bit of a modern spin on something very traditional, and can only help the sport grow, right? More eyes on the sport. Yeah. More attention.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't speak for USA Weightlifting, but I do work with them more and more these days. And again, I'm not speaking for them, but I almost think that they would be okay with that now, just because they understand that there are more people involved. The things have changed. People enjoy that type of thing. People enjoy, and they play music all the time now, during weightlifting competitions. And just that simple act of putting music on it's completely changed everything. I mean, you know, it's like, and then playing, doing replays in the middle of lifts or playing a commercial on the screen in the background, that never happened before. Just those little things make the weightlifting meet more, you know, a lot better for the spectators and makes it run a lot smoother. So it's definitely cool to see, the changes that have sparked through the years.
Mm. No, it's good. Yeah. Anything that doesn't evolve and adapt with changing times is going to eventually die off. And sure, people don't want to see the sport of weightlifting die off. I definitely don't. So it's good that they're making the adjustments to make it more interesting for the crowd. It's not 100% as relatable, but definitely when this is, take this with a grain of salt, basketball was obviously exceptionally popular when it was, you know, through the 70s and 80s, but there was a period of time when someone named Allen Iverson brought a lot of hip hop flavor and sort of maybe the more like hood sort of gangster elements to something that was very traditional. Like players used to always go out in suits. They always used to wear suits at press conferences, blah, 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 et cetera. It's very, very strict on what they could do. And along comes Allen Iverson. He's got, you know, baggy jeans on, big chains, baggy shirts, all that stuff. I think that brought a lot of attention and controversy to the sport in the same way John brought it to weightlifting. And I think it made it more popular with the masses. It brought, you know, especially around that time in the 90s with the hip hop movement as well, it brought a lot of that culture and a lot of that influence into basketball and kind of made it a lot cooler and definitely helped the sport evolve. Definitely got bigger brands involved. It changed, you know, what they were showing on TV and how they were talking about the sport, and obviously kids picking it up, changed everything. So I don't always, even though things may seem bad at first, I think ultimately in the long run, it's better for the sport.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, as long as, you know, everyone is, respectable and everything else, I think it's a good thing. And people want to be entertained. People want a show, and And that's just part of life. That's just part of it. And it's good to see the sport of weightlifting kind of getting into that just a little bit more. But I'll tell you, when I became a bigger fan of John North, there was a couple things that happened at this competition with John, and I'll keep one of them to myself. But the other one was, I don't remember if maybe we're in the same session. I think we're in the same session, and I'd gotten done lifting. I can't remember. But anyway, John goes out and he does a PR in the clean and jerk. I believe it was his last lift. And again, in the US, there's the US anti-doping agency. And you either, if you win, they'll grab you and they'll have a chaperone there and they'll notify you. And they have to stay with you the whole time, or you'll get chosen at random. And I can't remember what it was for John, but he got chosen. And he was so excited after that last lift, and I'm sure he slammed the bar down and everything else. He sprints off stage and he's screaming and yelling with excitement. He starts running up the stairs, and it's his last lift, so the chaperone is supposed to notify him, and he's trying to stop him and notify him. And they look at us and they're like, he can't do that. We're like, well, what do you want us to do about it? Yeah. Go get him. But yeah, he shoots out the building when he's supposed to be getting drug tested. So it's like, oh, I love that suspect. Yeah.
Nice.
But
nice. Awesome. All right, Chad, we'll get into our final four questions. I'm sure you got some of them ahead of time, so you may have prepared your answers. First question is, if you had an opportunity to sit down and interview anyone that is alive today, ask them anything that you want, who would you sit down and who would you interview?
Oh man, that's a tough question, man. One person, man, I'm going to have a little bit of a hard time pinpointing one person right now, but, this isn't a shameless plug, but just to be honest with you, the individuals that I'm getting on my new podcast is all about individuals that have overcome some major obstacle in their life. So whether it's a tragedy or drug addiction or anything that you can think of that's tough in life, and they've overcome it. Not only have they overcome it, or they're working to overcome it, but they're using their experience to reach out and help other people. And I've recorded 10 episodes so far, and every single episode that I've recorded has been just a tremendous honor and joy and learning opportunity and just inspiring for me. So to be able to sit down with those types of individuals, just an example, one of them was Kevin Ogar. I'm sure you guys, know Kevin, and just what he feels like it was meant to be what happened to him. He's thankful for what happened to him. He's thankful that he's in that chair, because it's led to what he's doing now, which is he's a big part of the adaptive CrossFit course. And he's out there helping a lot of people to be able to live their lives better and inspiration. So I know that's not probably the answer that you're looking for, but I enjoy interviewing those types of people. Because one, if other people can hear it, it can inspire and teach them and show them that what's possible. And two, just because it's a selfish learning opportunity for me as well.
Mm. Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that's actually a really good answer. Yeah, you've done well there. That was good. Second question that we have, Chad, is what is something you do every day now that you're a little bit older, probably different answer 10 years ago, but that you do every single day that you feel like is essential to the success of your day, like a habit or a routine?
Man, that's a great question. And again, this isn't a shameless plug, but it's an honest answer. I feel most accomplished on the days that I can sit down and write for any amount of time. And so it's been hard for me to develop the routine, because one, I love writing, but it's also hard for me to sit down and make myself start. Once I get started, I can go pretty good. But so I've tried to develop a routine at least through the 5 work days out of the week to sit down and write for an hour. And what I've noticed that's happened over this past month or so is that I'm finding myself going a little bit over that hour. And so I've developed a routine of an hour. And so now that that's become routine and it's more of a habit, it's easier for me to go over. And so now I can see that time hopefully inching up to a couple hours a day. But yeah, even if it's a day that where it's only, I only write for 15 to 30 minutes, that's in at this time in my life, what I feel most accomplished by doing. Also recording a podcast is up there on the list as well, but yeah.
Nice. Is it like a specific topic or is it just general, just get your thoughts out on paper, or you writing a book, or what's the topic of the writing?
Yeah, it's obviously not obviously, but it is weightlifting right now. I do have a couple other things that I want to write on, but right now I'm focused on writing, I guess, what I would call a book. I don't really want to say that I'm writing a book to put it out right now, because there's so much that goes into that and I'm still really far away, but that's where all these little hours each day are hopefully adding up to over a long period of time. Yeah.
Nice.
Is it like a philosophy book or is it more of an instructional?
It's an instructional, but I'd like to think it's a little bit of both, because, you know, the big thing that I'm in right now that I'm writing on is the beginning of it. And again, trying to get people to understand the reality of weightlifting, what realistically happens with elite lifters when they lift heavy weights, what do they do? And trying to get people to understand where misconceptions and misinterpretations come from, and try to help them get past those and understand what really needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Awesome. And, third question is, what is something recently, Chad, that you've changed your mind on that for a while you held as a strong belief?
And that's a tough one as well.
It's probably the hardest one.
I don't know. Yeah, it's tough. I don't know if I can come up with a good one right now, but I will say that probably through the first couple years of coaching in the community, I mean, I've always been pretty open, but I think that crash course that I got, that we all got, but that I got specifically in the first couple years, where just that was different than a weightlifting coach before then, because the CrossFit community is so big, and just being thrown into this battle that no one has ever fought before really opened me up. And I still hold on to some things a little bit too much probably, but it really opened me up and made me just ready to hear any ideas or any thoughts that anyone has to say on, again, weightlifting or coaching or movement or mobility or whatever else. And so it's, I would say along those lines, I'm always, changing my mind a little bit on certain things and learning and trying to adapt to those types of things.
Yeah. Nice. Do you mean the battle of helping all these kind of really rough beginners late in life, with their weightlifting journey?
What's that?
Is that the battle you're talking about? Like all these CrossFitters trying to learn weightlifting all of a sudden, how that happened?
Yeah, that's part of it. That's part of it. That's not all of it, but that's definitely a little bit of it. And we, you know, again, on the USA Weightlifting podcast, we were talking about that a little bit the other day, where we do have, you know, these individuals coming into the community that maybe haven't done anything athletic since high school, and they're 30 years old or they're 40 years old, and now they want to go do a weightlifting competition. And again, it goes back to what I was saying before, to where we have to be a different kind of coach than there's ever been in the weightlifting community. So it's cool. At the same time, it's really cool. But what I'm saying with that is that you have to be open. You have to be willing to be that type of person that will have a belief and allow it to be adjusted if it needs to.
Nice. That's good. Staying open-minded is important. Last thing we like to ask and leave the listeners with, Chad, is a book or maybe a quote that is one of your favorites.
Currently, the one that I've flipped through before, but I'm reading cover to cover right now is, and this is probably a little bit of a shameless plug too, because I work with them a little bit, but it's the Squat Bible from Dr. Aaron Horshig with Squat University. Yep. And it's again, just, I know so much of his content. As soon as I realized he had an Instagram page, it became my favorite, and I use his stuff all the time to back up when I'm teaching and stuff like that. And I've learned a lot from him, but just flipping through the first couple pages of that book and moving on, it's been a really good learning experience for me and opportunity. And so anyone out there in this community will benefit from that book. So
yeah, he's got a good page. If you go to the Squat University on Instagram, it's like 500,000 followers, massive following. They put out some really, really good stuff. It's always educational, always valuable. Nothing that'll waste your time. That's for sure. It's really good. Absolutely. It's good to see something like that so popular. Not another chicken spam. Yeah. Can't take it. It's too many.
That's another kind of frustrating thing. But again, something that I've had to, accept that there's somewhat of a skill I don't know, even know the right word to put with it, for all these years to put my heart and soul into a post that, I do it because I want to put out information and I want to help people, and then for it to get nothing. And then for, someone else to post a picture with, just of their body, that looks good. Don't get me wrong. It looks good. And I look at it too. But, to get so many followers and likes from that, stuff like that, it is very pleasing to me to see someone like Aaron and Squat University build such an incredibly large following from doing what he's done. He's worked hard on it. He really has.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. It's good stuff. All right. Well, Chad, we're excited to – you're releasing a podcast that you just mentioned, but it's not out yet. Do you have a release date for it coming up?
Man, it's actually coming up pretty soon. I'm not sure when this particular episode is going to come out, but I'm aiming for the week of actually next week, a week from today. So it'll be probably on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday of next week, which I think Monday, the September 17th, mm-hmm. Is when the first I'm going to try to release the first three episodes, and then kind of just trickle down a little bit from there. But yeah, it's called They Became Superheroes. And like I said before, the types of guests that are going to be on there are individuals like Kevin Ogar, just kind of telling their story and everything about their story, about how they, either got injured or what tragedy it was and what they went through and what they had to work through to come out on the other side of it. And how they're currently putting their story out there to help others in at this moment in time. So,
That's fantastic. Did you give the name of it? What's it going to be called?
So people can They Became Superheroes.
They Became Superheroes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, we'll look out for that. And then where can people follow you on Instagram as well, Chad?
Instagram is at Ollie Chad, OlyChad, and I'm sorry, I do call it Ollie Chad, not Oli Chad. A lot of people get mad at me for saying that, but OlyChad, and yeah, that's where I put some content. I don't put as much on there as I should, but talking about Squat University, I'll do a collaborate on a post with him. We try to do one about once every 2 weeks, but you can find some of my stuff there as well, along with all the other good stuff that he has. And then Power Monkey Fitness, I've got a lot of stuff on Power Monkey Fitness website. We've got programs available and stuff like that. And of course, we've got Power Monkey Camp that we do twice a week. We've got Power Monkey Clinics all throughout the world on weekends. And we'll be going down to South America here in December for back-to-back weekends of kind of a smaller version of Power Monkey Camp. And yeah, that's about it.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, I feel like so many of the seminars are moving to South America now. It's like the booming place. Everyone's like, yeah, we've got South America coming up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's cool. All right, Chad, it's been an honor to finally have you on, and we appreciate your time. I'm sure we'll chat to you very soon.
Yeah, guys, thanks again for having me on. And hey, Raf, it was good to see you again. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's crazy.
All right, there it was, guys. Another amazing episode. Thank you so much to Chad for coming on and sharing those insights. Make sure, if the podcast is out now, which I believe it is, you go and have a listen. Listen to the episode that he talked about. And I know you guys will appreciate the effort and the work that he's putting into it. So it's a good show. Go follow it. Give it a rating. Let us know what you think as well. And I'm sure we'll have Chad on again. And we still want to try and bring the Power Monkey Fitness guys out to Australia. That is something they haven't done yet. But, you know, if you're thinking guys like Dave Durante and Chad Vaughan are going to be there, I mean, that's two guys that you'd want to see, you know, just the two of them by themselves, even solo. And you've got Dan Pope as well. He's on that staff. So plenty of awesome staff members on that show, sorry, on that seminar as well. So supporting the show today, we had Activated Nutrients, activatednutrients.com, offer MMP, saves you 20%. And we had
Matt Warrath.
Yes.
Just tell him the My Muscle Project sent you and he'll look after you. And he's got individual group options. There's really, even just his free macro calculator, there's like something for everyone.
Yeah, awesome stuff. And we will see you guys on the next show. Thanks, guys. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.